Okay. So those are the statistics. I sent you a mail in case you're interested in making sure where you stand. I believe it was for full score is 125, right? Yeah, 125, with, well, actually 100 required and 25 is extra credit. Okay, so really the only marks that count is what you got out of the 100. The other extra credit is taken into account as extra credit, which one of these days you should ask me how I deal with it. But if you don't, that's fine with me. So, and I sent a mail saying that since the TA wrote a long mail explaining what you can do to get good points in project analysis, if you want to use that to improve your project to presentation, as I said, you can submit until Thursday. Presumably, you know this already because nobody is actually submitting anything. You're ready to submit? Good. You can take it back and submit it if you want. Until Thursday, you have chance, the same chance everybody does. But remember that homework 3 is still due on Thursday. Okay? I mean, by postponing things, I can't postpone your inevitable end, for example. So that's just not going to happen. So the homework has to be is due on Thursday so that we can give you the solutions, and then you'll have a week before the midterm. Okay. Any questions? Okay. Yes. What planning registration class? It's not just in planning, but he would have a recitation. He plans to have a recitation class. That's what I must have said. It's not just a very specific topic. He does expect to have a recitation class, I think, this week. He's not here. I'll make sure that he sends you a mail. This week, probably, and next week, are the two possible times. We were all basically crazy with the Ichikai deadline for the camera-ready papers yesterday, so nobody, I mean, so he wasn't obviously sending you any mails. So there would be a recitation, and I think Lei would also be, of course, available during the TA hours, and you can ask all questions, and plus, if you guys want to go en masse, then he can always have an impromptu discussion. Okay. Yes? What does R mean? I don't know what R means. Let me see. Okay. I think, I don't know. There is some thing for it. It's like the Alibaba story. Except all of you have an R, so it's only interesting if you don't have an R. So yeah, the ID, it's too common. But I mean, it's nothing. Don't worry about it. Other questions? So several of you would have seen that you got some marks that have been cut, and some other marks have been given. And if you're really angry at him, and if in fact you could see what has been cut out, and if it's actually bigger marks, don't yell at Lei. I made him change it. Essentially, we wanted to ensure that analysis is important. I said this in the class, and I want to make sure that if you didn't do analysis, if you just gave the numbers, then you got cut. Okay, that was the thing. So I will run right after the class, and so even if Lei is walking slow, don't do anything to him. It's not his mistake. Okay. Any other questions? Okay. I also sent mails to a couple of people whose project descriptions were the best this time around. Project analysis was the best this time around. And I asked them if for the permission to put their projects up for the others to look at. If they decide to take up that offer, they will send it to me, and then I'll put them up. Okay. That's the usual thing they do. Okay. One other thing, of course, is midterm is due Midterm is next Thursday, 10/26. Yes. Everything that has been covered by homework and nothing more. Okay. So whatever has been covered until homework 3, which would be due this week. So in particular, Bayes networks and uncertainty reasoning would not be included in the midterm because I haven't asked you homework questions on them yet. Okay. That doesn't mean that you should sleep in today's class because you will pay for it some other time. So it's just not next week. Okay, any other questions? Not. Anything else that happened here? Okay. The class mailing list is working, so expect to start getting more mails. So if we don't have any other questions, I'm going to start where I left off last class, which is we have started doing reasoning with basically just by using Bayes rule directly and found that everything works fine. In fact, the numbers that the Bayes rule requires to do inference are the conditional probabilities, which are actually quite easy to get. I mean, easier to assess, and it looked like, so they're more natural than the joint probability distribution entries. Okay, so it looked like it was a good thing going for us, until we found that you can have multiple symptoms, and they might have dependencies between them, and to deal with the dependencies, you would start asking for numbers such as this. Okay. Which, if you consider if there are k symptoms, then you can have 2 power k such numbers, just conditioned on cavity. Okay? And so that again looks like it's too many numbers that you're going to wind up talking about. Now, of course, one idea is to just assume independence. Okay? And in particular, not even assume complete independence, but assume independence with respect to cavity. So this is called conditional independence. So you can actually, in fact, it's not written in any of the slides or in the book, but you can use the following notation to think of independence. Okay, a set of random variables X is independent of another set of random variables Y. That's what that notation is. Okay, and a conditional independence assertion, and if I just say this, this is pure independence. They have, what happens to X has no connection to what happens to Y. In particular, if you have independence, you know that probability of X and Y is exactly probability of X times probability of Y. So the distribution completely factors out. So the joint distribution of X and Y will now be just in terms of the marginal distribution of X times the marginal distribution of Y. That's it. Okay, there are no interactions between them. Now, we'll also talk about a slightly more general notion called conditional independence. So the conditional independence assertions are of the form where basically you're saying X is independent of Y given some evidence Z. So X and Y are not always independent, but now that you know Z, they are independent. So in some sense, this is more general than this, because this is nothing but X is independent of Y given Z, which is empty. So you don't have to give anything. So they are independent to begin with, even without any evidence. Okay. One of the interesting things we will see is if X is independent of Y upfront, without knowing anything, do you think that they will continue to be independent if I give you some evidence about some other variable? You would think X and Y are unconnected, they are independent, and yet I'm just telling you something new about a certain set of variables, you would like to think that if x and y are independent to begin with, they will continue to be conditionally independent given anything. Unfortunately, that's not true. Okay, in fact, we'll see this. In fact, you do know, with respect to the burglary, earthquake, alarm, John calls, Mary calls. In this kind of a scenario, it turns out that if you just think of that, don't care about the network itself, just think about the scenario itself. Okay, if I don't tell you anything, is the a priori probability of burglary independent? I mean, is burglary independent of earthquake? Clearly, if you don't say anything, burglary has no connection to earthquake. But if I told you alarm is going off, is burglary independent of earthquake? So the way you think about independence is the following. I tell you, okay, what do you think is the likelihood of burglary? You come up with some number, 0.9. Okay, then I'll tell you earthquake occurred. What do you think is the what's the probability of burglary? Do you change your number? If you change, then there is a dependency. If not, they're independent. And furthermore, from that, again, it also means that the probability that burglary and earthquake together happen is the same as probability of burglary occurring times probability of earthquake occurring. This is all independence, the ramifications of independence assumption. This is all ramifications of independence, right? Now, the question, of course, is burglary and earthquake are independent if I don't tell you anything. But, you know, if I told you alarm is going up, then burglary and earthquake are in fact connected. Okay, so for example, if I tell you alarm is going off and then I tell you burglary occurred, then you don't need to have earthquake occur. Okay, so their numbers are connected now. Okay, so conditional independence is an interesting idea. You know, if you haven't thought about it in the beginning, it's sort of non-intuitive upfront. Okay, so for example, even though these are independent, they can become dependent given B. So B and E are, so what we are saying is B and E are independent, but B and E are not independent given A. Neat idea. Okay. Anyway, these are basically the conditional independence assumptions, and once you have these kinds of conditional independence assumptions that are available to you, you can use that to cut down the number of probabilities you would need to know. So in particular, so if I'm ever trying to compute the probability of toothache and catch given cavity, if I happen to know that toothache and catch are independent given cavity, toothache and catch are independent given cavity, that means they're conditionally independent, then I can write this as probability of toothache given cavity times probability of catch given cavity. Okay, look at that. This almost looks like the independence, what you would have done in the independence assumption. So in the independence assumption case, if toothache and catch are independent to begin with, you wouldn't have talked about any evidence. So the probability of toothache and catch would be then probability of toothache times probability of catch, which again reduces the number of numbers you need. Okay, because ultimately if you have k variables, k Boolean variables, you are getting by with k numbers if they are all completely independent. Okay, whereas you can get by whereas in general you might need 2 power k minus 1 numbers. Okay, so conditional independence, if it holds, you can use it. Now the question is, here what we actually did is, to make our life simple, we'll just will the world to be what we want it to be. In fact, if this is the case, you're happy. If this is not the case, then you can't make this assumption. Then you can't actually write this as this. If you do, then you will wind up getting wrong probabilistic estimate. If things are dependent and you assume they're independent, then you get wrong decision. Okay, wrong assessment of probability. So what this brings up ultimately is the question of, given n random variables, can you sit down and write down all the conditional independence assumptions that you think, that you know will hold between those variables? Okay? So, yeah, I give you n random variables. You know, I mean, these n random variables are your domain. So you have made, you have modeled your domain using these n random variables. You thought about your domain and you're going to, you know that certain things are independent of certain things given certain other things. Can you write down all the conditional independence assumptions that hold in your domain? If you write them down, then you can use them to cut down A, the number of numbers you need to specify, and B, to make the inference easier. Okay? Who's going to write them down? And what's the easiest way to write down conditional independence assumption? First, let me ask you the following question. How many do you think, how many conditional independence assumptions do you think might be present? I mean, how many conditional independence assertions might be present for n random variables? In the worst case, you know, you're asking, you are the guy with the domain, so you're writing what is independent of what given what. Now, these don't have to be, remember that these, x can be a set of variables, it's a subset of n random variables, y is a subset of n random variables, z is a subset of n random variables. Subsets are bad. If you have n things, there are 2 power n subsets. So in the worst case, I can start having exponential number of conditional independence statements that hold in my domain. This is like embarrassment of riches. You wanted conditional independence statements so that you can, you know, get by with fewer numbers and all that fun stuff. Except if you want to write everything about when is x independent of y given z, if you want to write all of them down, there are just way too many of them. Enter Bayes' net. Bayes' nets essentially tell you that if you just write down the causation in the domain, immediate causation between variables in the domain, then the topology of the network will in essence define all the conditional independence that hold in that domain. So you could in essence be specifying exponential number of conditional independence assertions just by giving Bayes' net representation. So this is another reason why Bayes' networks are very interesting. Okay, so you would actually just provide the causal connections between the variables and the conditional independence assertions. You can ask any random x and any random y, given any random z, you can ask, is x independent of y given z? And there's a little algorithm which will tell you whether they're independent or not. So it's an implicit specification of conditional independence assertion. Now you notice that in fact, it turns out that while this is interesting, during the way, when we actually are using Bayes' nets, we don't ever ask the question, is X independent of Y given Z? Because that gets used implicitly in the algorithm design in terms of the algorithms that infer with the Bayes' net. But it is nice to understand that what did happen essentially when you went to Bayes' net is, instead of writing these exponential number of conditional independence assumptions, you just give the topology of the network. Which also makes sort of commits me to the following other question, which is, having given you the Bayes' net topology, I should give you an approximately, at least an idea of an algorithm, which can answer the queries of this type. Because I made a big deal about it. I said, you can, you know, tell whether X is independent of Y given Z. I should tell you how to do that. Okay, and I'll do that. In fact, we'll talk about a nice little algorithm called Bayes' ball, which is a ball which bounces around in the Bayes' network to tell you whether things are independent or not. Okay, the important thing is that exponential number of independent assertions are implicitly specified. Okay. And then let me remind you of this picture again to give you a big picture view of the probabilistic inference. You could always answer any possible query about probabilistic about n random variables if you have access to their joint distribution. You can always do that. That's the first principles approach. Okay? The problem with that, of course, is joint distribution. A, there are too many different numbers, and B, they're hard to assess. Okay? We can use Bayes' rule, which is sort of a local connection between variables. See, everything in a joint distribution table includes all n variables. If you have an n variable joint distribution, every number here is an n variable number. A is true, B is false, C is true, Z is false, D is false, blah, 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 all the way to nth variable. Okay? And so those are kind of hard to assess. Here, you can actually talk in terms of direct conditional probabilities. What's the probability that A is true given B is true? Forget about everything else. And if you tell me what's the probability of A is true given B is true, I can tell you what's the probability of B is true given A is true using Bayes' rule. Okay? So think of Bayes' rule essentially as providing syntactic shortcuts without having to compute the entire, without having access to the entire joint distribution. You can still answer some kinds of queries which are pretty natural looking queries. The worst case complexity of these are the same, obviously. And then the Bayes nets are really going to do inference with Bayes rule. That means they, in essence, will be taking conditional probabilities and inverting them to answer queries. However, one advantage of Bayes nets is the conditional independence assertions are implicitly specified in terms of the Bayes network topology. Okay? So you sort of need to know why we went from here to here and went from here to here. Question. So here are the Bayes networks or belief networks. All we do is we provide these kinds of statements. So for example, here whether is, so in the Bayes network, each node corresponds to a random variable. And there is a directed link between one node and another node. And then basically Bayes networks are directed graphs. And so you could have directed links between one node and another node. Okay. Roughly speaking, when there is such a link, it means this causes this. However, we'll see that causation is not required. Okay. I mean, in fact, it turns out that if you specify Bayes net in the direction of causation, you wind up oftentimes requiring the fewest number of probabilities, as well as probabilities that are easier to assess. Okay? But we'll see today that sometimes, given a domain, you may not even know what the causality is in the domain. You don't know what causes what. In which case, you can always still come up with a topology and compute the numbers with respect to that. Okay? So what is this little network saying? This is saying cavity is a variable, toothache is a variable, catch is a variable, and weather is a variable. And cavity is affecting toothache and catch, and weather is not affecting anything. So what are all the conditional independence assumptions that are implicitly specified by this network? I can say weather independent of toothache and cavity. Weather independent of cavity and catch. Weather independent of cavity, toothache and catch. Weather independent of toothache and catch. So already huge number of bunch of conditional independence assertions that actually hold from this that I can write down. Okay? Furthermore, I can say it turns out the other thing that we'll see is toothache is independent of catch given cavity. Okay, this is the one of the main implicit assumptions, implicit statements of a Bayes network is give a child, a node is independent of its siblings given its immediate parents. Okay, so it turns out that in this particular case, toothache is independent of catch given cavity. That's one more assertion that holds just given this network. Yes. Yes, weather is independent of cavity too. It's interesting that all of these are obvious, just given this net one. But if you start writing, each of them is a separate net one. Now, what's interesting, what's more interesting is, suppose you want to stop any one of these conditional independence assertions, you can put in a link and it will stop. How do I stop weather not being independent of toothache in this network? Put a link. So in fact, one very interesting point to understand about Bayes networks is it's not the links, it's the lack of links which tells you conditional independence. It's not the links, it's the lack of links which tells you conditional independence. So in this particular case, if you have a complete directed graph, okay, then there would be a link from here to here, there could be a link from here to here, there could be a link from here to here, and there could also be a link from one of these to another one. Okay? All those links are missing. For every one of those links that is missing, you are in essence making a conditional dependence assertion. That's another nice way of thinking about it. Okay? One important thing in Bayes networks is, I said they are directed graphs. They are directed acyclic graphs. They are directed acyclic graphs. That means there is no cycle, which makes sense to the extent causality cannot be cyclic. Yes? Can you have a parent as well as sibling? As long as there is no cycle, tell me what you want me to write. So I'll write A here, B here. So there is C, and then that one, right? Yeah, that's fine. There's no cycle here. There's no cycle there. That's all I care about.
What means when you say cycle?
What do you mean? Oh, no, there's basically, if I have, for example, this would be a cycle. That's a cycle. So what does it mean? That basically means C is influencing B, which is influencing A, which is influencing C back. So that's a cycle in causality. So you would assume that something is causing something else. You are not causing yourself. Now, if you know, sometimes you may be causing your value in the T minus 1th instant might have an effect on your value in the Tth instant. But that is not a cycle in causality. Because really what will happen is there is a Ct minus 1, At minus 1, Bt minus 1 variables, and they don't have any cycle. And then there is also Ct, At, Bt variables, and this has an effect on this. In fact, what I just wrote here, it's a Bayes network, except since the variables, see here, Ct is the value of variable C at time t, and this is the value of the same variable C at time t minus 1. So this is called what? A dynamic Bayes net. It's a Bayes net which talks about influences as time progresses. Okay? But again, there is no causality, there is no causal cycle, you know. And in general, normal dynamic Bayes networks, there better not be a connection from Ct back to Ct minus 1. That makes no sense. Because that means something that happens in the future affected something that happened in the past. Causally. Okay? Other questions? Yes? Weather is independent of
toothache.
No, weather is independent of toothache, period. But it's also independent of toothache given cavity.
Yeah, how would you represent weather being independent of toothache given cavity, but not weather being independent?
Okay, so that's, I would say, so you want, so this is interesting. So you want me to write weather being
of toothache given cavity.
Yes. whether it is not being independent of toothache right away, but it should be independent. No, it's opposite what I was talking about. Whether it was independent of toothache to begin with, but once I gave you some evidence, they are no longer independent. But let me so I'll try to think about this, and somebody else can also think about it with me. But let me use this to ask this answer a very interesting point that your question implicitly brings up, which is, if I have n random variables, I have written down exactly the 15, you know, n is like say 50, and I sit down and written down all the 2975 conditional independence assertions that hold for these 50 variables. Nothing more, nothing less. Exactly these hold, everything else doesn't hold. Can you give me an exact Bayes network which will only have these conditional independence assumptions implicitly specified and nothing else? This is actually a very deep question. Okay? Because I'm arguing the opposite way. I'm saying if you say a Bayes network, there are a bunch of conditional independence assertions that it corresponds to. But what if I know the conditional independence assertions that actually hold in the domain? So somebody like you sat down and started writing, I want to say this, but not this. Is there a network that will capture this? It turns out that's not possible. It turns out that Bayes networks by themselves are not expressive enough to capture every possible set of conditional independences exactly. And I'll give you an example. I don't remember this. I'll give you an example once I go home, once I'm done with the class. Okay? You can write it very easily, even with three variables. So what does that mean? That means, actually, I'm talking about Bayes networks as if they're a model, but, you know, if your domain doesn't correspond, has a certain set of conditional assumptions, independence assumptions that cannot be modeled by a single Bayes network, then what do? It turns out that there is another graphical model. These are, by the way, called graphical models. Okay, Bayes network is a graphical model of probability distribution. There is another graphical model called undirected networks. They are not called Bayes nets, they are actually called Markov random fields. Okay? And those of you who may have heard of both Markov random fields and Bayes networks, and that may be a couple of you, might be wondering, why do you need two? And it turns out neither of them subsumes the other. That means there are, you know, given a specific domain and its particular set of conditional independence assertions, you could be, one of the following possibilities can occur. You can model that domain exactly both in a Bayes network and in a conditional random field, and in a Markov random field. You can only model it in Bayes network. You can only model it in Markov random field. Okay? So, the opposite actually, this, we'll leave that as a whole for now. Yes? I agree. That's the point. That is exactly the point. So because anytime somebody says, give me a couple of things and I'll do the rest for you, you should be worried. What is the rest that you're doing? What if the rest you're doing is not the stuff that I want? Okay? What's interesting is there are very few cases in practice where you would actually come face to face with this expressiveness limitation of Bayes network. Although, you know, theoretically you can come up with that. Okay? So here is the example. This is supposed to be very surprising, except you have seen it 10,000 times now, so it's no longer surprising. This is, again, a Bayes network example for our Pearl example, for burglary earthquake example. So now, one of the other interesting things is that to specify a Bayes network, you specify the topology, and then you have to specify the probability numbers. Now the question is, what probability numbers do you specify? It turns out that all you need to specify is conditional probability tables of the following form. For every node n, the conditional distribution of that node n given its immediate parent. That's the only thing you need to give. That's it. So for this guy, he has no parent. So you just give probability distribution of whether given nothing, which is probability of whether true and probability of whether false. For this guy, has no parent, so you just give probability distribution of cavity. For this guy, there's exactly one parent, so you give a probability distribution of toothache given cavity and toothache not given, given no cavity. And then if you give toothache given cavity, you can get not toothache given cavity by subtracting it from one. And vice versa. Okay? And for similarly, probability of catch given cavity, probability of catch given no cavity. Those are the only numbers you need to provide. If you just provide those numbers, then I will tell you the unique joint distribution represented by this Bayes network. And what it is multiplying these distributions together. So in particular, if you ever want to find out the joint distribution, to find out the joint distribution, I need to be able to answer queries of the following form. Whether, not cavity, toothache, not catch. This would be one of the entries in the joint distribution table, right? I need to be able to come with that number. And I would basically say this is nothing but probability of whether times probability of not cavity times probability of toothache given not cavity times probability of not catch given not cavity. And each of those four numbers were present in the conditional probability table that you provided. You multiply them, you got this. So in essence, you are implicitly specifying the entire joint distribution just by providing this conditional table. Okay, let's repeat that with respect to this guy. I don't know whether you can see these numbers. I wish you could. So this is burglary, earthquake, alarm, John calls, Mary calls, and I gave you this specific topology. Okay. And if I give you the specific topology, once I give you the topology, I know what conditional probability distributions I have to assess. Okay? So for this, I need to provide just the prior distribution of burglary, prior distribution of earthquake, distribution of alarm given burglary earthquake, and so there would be four numbers in it, distribution of John calls given just alarm, distribution of Mary calls given just alarm. Okay, and if you want to find out in this particular guy, let's write down, pick up any random joint distribution entry, make up some probability that Mary doesn't call, John calls, no alarm, no burglary, earthquake exists, earthquake attack. Remember, this is one of the 32 numbers that are present in the joint distribution. If I tell you how to compute each of these 32 numbers, then you can compute any number, any other probabilistic query. Right? Okay. So the question is, how do I compute this? Just look in the causal direction. So probability of not burglary times probability of earthquake times probability of alarm given not burglary and earthquake times probability of John calling given alarm. John calling given not alarm times probability of Mary not calling given not alarm. I gave you these numbers. Now, where did I get these numbers? In my Los Angeles scenario, these numbers represent reality. In yours, they may be different numbers. So if I believe these are my numbers, then what would I write? Not burglary would be point, this is 0.01 is burglary, right? So not burglary is 0.99. Agreed? So not burglary is 0.99. What about earthquake? Earthquake is probability is I think 0.001 again. I think I can read that, I can't read it properly. But so it will be 0.001. Alarm, probability of not alarm given no burglary and earthquake. Given no burglary and earthquake, what is the probability of alarm is this number. Whatever that number is, 1 minus that is the number I want. Okay? So I would plug that there. And whatever that is, I don't know what this number is. This looks like 0.79. So I would assume it's 1 minus 0.79. And probability of J given not A, John calling given this is 0.01. And Mary calling without alarm is this, Mary not calling without alarm is 1 minus this. So 1 minus 0.01, which is 0.99. Multiply those, you got the joint for that particular entry. All you need to know is there is a way of computing the entire joint to agree that any possible probabilistic query can be answered. Right, because we went through that already. Okay, now let's look at all sorts of nice things about this. The question first of all is, how many independent numbers did you specify here? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10. 10 numbers. How many numbers would you have to specify in general, in the worst case, if you have 5 random variables? What? 31 numbers, 2 power 5 minus 1. Instead of specifying 32 numbers, you specified 10 numbers. Makes sense? Because you believe in your domain, causality works this way. It should also make sense to you that you could have just specified 5 numbers if your domain is different. How would your domain be if you can get by with just 5 numbers? What? All independent. There are no edges. All nodes are disconnected. In which case, you just have to provide one number here, one number here, one number here, one number here. That's the lowest. Okay? And how should your network be? I'll come back to all this. How should you think your network be? Okay, here are 3 networks for the same 5 variables, and I'll get back to them again. But look at this network. This is a happy network. Okay? It's a complete directed graph. And if you count the number of numbers you need to specify this, that's 31. Doesn't look like a pretty good stone to break your head with, because you had 31 to begin with. And this one only requires 10. This is a different network on the same variables, that requires 12. The beauty is, based on the independences that you think hold in the network, you can reduce the number of probabilities that you need to assess. It's good, it's a sliding scale, where the slider is dependent on the theory of causation in that domain. Okay? Of course, the best would be, 5 disconnected nodes, in which case the numbers needed would be just 5. Okay. Yes, sir. What? Say, just a second. What did you say? How many should you need? Very obviously. If you have Boolean variables, then for every node in the network, so let's do this, right? So here is a network. I don't even know what this network is. There's a network. Okay? How many numbers? Assume all of the variables are Boolean. How many numbers do you need? you need, this guy has no parents, so you need 1, 1, 1, three numbers, and for this guy there is only one parent, you need two numbers, parent being true, what is the probability that I will be true, parent being false, what is the probability that I will be true. And then for this guy, how many numbers do you need? Eight numbers. Now in general, in fact, it can be said that in a Bayes network, where the maximum parent RET of a node is K, that means the node with the maximum number of parents happens to have K parents, then you would wind up requiring of the order of 2 power K. In particular, if you also have, if in a Bayes network where the maximum parent RET of a node is K and the maximum domain size of any variable is D. If it's all Boolean variables, the domain size is 2 for everybody. But suppose some of them are multi-valued. Okay? If there are maximum domain size is D and maximum parent RET is K, then you need to specify of the order of D power K numbers. Okay? Now, specifying means you have to go and assess this. You have to either call people up and say, okay, given this, 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 what's the probability of this being true? Given this, not this, and not this, I'm sorry, given this is to be true, this is false, what's the probability? Given this is true, this is false, that's true, what's the probability? You have to get all those numbers. Okay, so I'm going to just kind of quickly review whatever I said on the board. Okay. The semantics for Bayes networks, ultimately, to say that Bayes networks can be used to answer any random probabilistic query, all I need to do is to connect the Bayes networks to one thing from which you can kind of compute all the probabilities. Joint distribution is one such thing. So if I can tell you, given a Bayes network, what is the unique joint distribution defined by it, then I have told you that it has unique semantics. Okay? Now, so for example, now what is interesting, of course, is, so as I said, in this case, we did this, so probability of J and M and A and not B and not E turns out to be written essentially, you can write this as not B, probability of not B, and probability of not E, and probability of A given not B, not E, probability of J given A, probability of M given A. Now the question is, how did I go from here to here? What rule in the probability theory allowed me to go from here to here? It turns out this is where you use the use the conditional probability assertion. So it turns out that you are not doing anything surprising here. All you are doing is you are writing the chain rule. Okay? So if you want to compute this probability, okay, you can write this as probability J given M, A, not B, not E, times probability M given A, not B, not E, times probability A given not B, not E, times probability not B given not E, times probability not E. Agreed? Now it turns out I could have written this also, it turns out that I could have also equally well written this whole thing as probability not E given not B, A, M, J multiplied by probability not B given A, M, J, etc., etc. These two would be equal. I just don't want to write this right now. There's nothing wrong with that. The reason I want to write this is because I can compute these numbers knowing the conditional independence assertions that we know hold in Bayes network. In particular, as I said, probability of J, probability of any node given in this kind of in this scenario, probability of John given Mary alarm, earthquake, burglary is nothing but probability of John given alarm. Because why? Because in this network you can show that J is conditionally independent of M, not B, not E, given alarm. This holds to be true in this network, and I'll show you, you know, more clearly why this definitely holds to be true. But because that is true in this network, I can write this essentially by just cutting these guys out. And the other number I know. And similarly, probability M given A and not B not E, there is one more thing I happen to know holds to be true in this network. M is independent of not B and not E given alarm. Okay? And similarly, A is not independent of anything given these two. I mean, so it turns out A is actually dependent on not B and E directly, but then you do know those numbers. So I know this number, so I can actually cut this out. So I know P M given A, P J given A, P A given not B not E. And finally, I can also show that not B is independent of not E given nothing at all. Not B is independent of not E given nothing at all. And so not B is basically just not B given not E is nothing but not B itself. And then similarly, not E, that number also known. Okay? So in essence, it was the conditional independence assumptions that are directly present in this Bayes network that you allowed you to specify the joint probability distribution directly. These are the useful ones. In general, what you will wind up seeing is, you know, for every node, it is independent of its siblings and its ancestor. This much is for sure. You know, there are more things that will be true, but you can be sure of this following rule. A node is independent of its siblings and ancestors given its immediate parents. This is for sure. It turns out many more things are also true, but this much is for sure in any given Bayes network. Okay? And all I did was I actually used that rule to write these guys down. You can check that. And because of those independence assumptions, I do have a joint distribution. And once I have the joint distribution, I'm home free. It's essentially I'm in the same, you know, place as I was before. Except now, I don't have to worry what numbers am I supposed to assess. Once I know the topology, which presumably I wrote because I know the causation, what causes what. Okay? I basically know what numbers to look for. And those could be much less than the 2 power k numbers that I would need to look when there are k variables. Okay. So there are two things that I want to talk about after this. One is constructing Bayes networks. I will get back to this in a minute, but for now let's assume that the idea is not that hard. If you know the Bayes domain, all you would do is you will put a link from a node to another node if that node causes this node, sort of through an immediate causal effect. So I could have put burglary to my Mary calls too, but really what we are saying is burglary causes alarm, which then causes Mary calling. Okay? Now, if I were to, in this network, if I were to put another link from burglary to Mary calls, what could I be saying? Not only does alarm going off wake up Mary, who calls it, calls the person. But there is some other thing that happens when burglary happens. Maybe Mary has ESP, you know, extrasensory perception. And so whenever there are people in Pearl's home, she feels like a nod on her back of her head, and she right away calls Pearl. There's an extra probability now. It has nothing to do with alarm. So if there is an additional causal influence between burglary and Mary that's not accounted for by alarm itself, then you would put one more link from burglary to Mary. If you really believe that the way it is going on is burglary causes alarm, earthquake causes alarm, alarm causes John calling, alarm causes Mary calling, this is what you have written. Once you write down the network, then you are home free. And in the same case, in the case of toothache and cavity, in the case of toothaches and cavities and catches, it all depends on what you think causes what. If you think catches cause cavities, then you would write catch top and cavity in the bottom. But if you know that in the domain cavities cause catches and cavities also cause toothaches, then you would write cavity, a link to catch as well as toothache. Okay. What if nothing causes anything? What if nothing causes anything? What if I have, let's say, so I'm going to keep that, but what can I remove? What if I have an image? And I made this image, basically I quantized this image into some what, 256 by 256 pixels. The intensity in any normal images, the intensity at this pixel sort of is connected to the intensity in its other pixels. But is this guy causing the intensity to this guy? No. They just sort of go together. The intensities tend to kind of gradually change over the neighborhood. If you have that sort of a thing where the influence has no natural causal direction, you can still use Bayes networks. Nobody stops you. In fact, you can use Bayes networks, and as I showed you three possible networks for this domain. Right? And all of them are equally valid. It's just in one case you will need many more numbers to specify the same 32 number. In other case you need much fewer numbers. Okay? So you could still basically say, well, I really believe that every node in the odd position causes, let's say odd, I'll define odd, I mean, let's think of this image to be one dimensional. Okay, I know it's a weird image. So I could say every node in the odd position causes the intensity of every node in the even position. I can say that. And I can compute the probability distribution with respect to that. But that's not a particularly natural representation. So it turns out that when there is no clean natural causality for the process that you're trying to capture, you would go with undirected models. Remember the one that I talked to you about, Markov random fields? You normally use them to compute, to basically talk about, let's say, the probability distribution of pixels in images. In fact, random fields came from that community, and also statistical physics community. Okay. Now, what I want to ask is the following. Let's see, before I go to the baseball. What I want to ask really is, I already told you this holds, I mean this thing went away. A node is independent of its immediate its siblings and its ancestors given its immediate parents. That's true. And in fact, a more general thing that is true, is this. A node is independent of everything else given its Markov blanket. And its Markov blanket are, this node is independent of everybody else in the network if you give its immediate parents, its immediate children, and other parents of its children. That's like a cozy community. Okay? And I showed, what's this? Linus with the security blanket. So, this is the security blanket for this guy. Okay? So, if you give, for any node, if you give all these nodes, then it's independent of everything else. That turns out to be a more general statement than that. Okay, but this is kind of unsatisfactory. I want an algorithm which will tell me whether X is independent of Y given Z. That's it. And if I can give you that, all of these will be just special cases of that algorithm. Yes, sir. How about that?
How will
a sibling
why would it be needed?
So the idea is, all I'm saying is, if this guy is outside, let's say, okay, and if I gave you this value, then this could have been caused either by this guy or the other parent. And in fact, this guy has a probability distribution which names all its parents. So in a way, these guys are dependent through their children. Okay? So I want an algorithm, and so what we will try to do, and I'll start today and then hopefully we'll end next time, is we basically want to define an algorithm called the Bayes bouncing ball algorithm. Okay? What it does is, I'm trying to answer the query, is X independent of Y given Z? I'll take the network, and for every node listed in Z, I will shade those nodes in the network. That means those are evidence nodes. I know something about those nodes, whether they're true or false. I put a bunch of balls at one ball at each X node. And then these balls just kind of bounce around. I would see if any of these balls ever reaches any node in Y. Any of these balls ever reaches any node in Y. If it does, then they are not independent. If it doesn't, then they are independent. Okay? That's the general idea. This is what I want to compute. Now, it's not surprising that this will work, for example, if I have a simple disconnected graph, X, Y, Z. Okay, Z is given, I shade it, I put a little green ball here, and I say bounce around, and after a while I open the door and see, and it hasn't yet reached Y, because there's no way it will actually, you have to assume that bouncing would happen if there is an edge, clearly, because otherwise it's like teleportation. So these balls presumably bounce over the edges to other nodes, and then when they reach their node, then again they bounce over those edges to the other nodes and so on. Okay, all you care is if they ever can reach any node in Y. So this is actually, it's a simple graph theory problem. It's like, is there a sort of a path from X's to, some of the X's to any of the Y's, given the Z. However, it cannot be normal graph theory problem. It cannot be normal graph theory problem because all sorts of interesting things. We know, for example, let's look at reason with this. So what do you think in this case, if I give you burglary, if I give you alarm, is burglary independent of Mary call? If I give you alarm, is burglary independent of Mary call? Yes, because that was one of the main points we said. Mary calls is independent of all its ancestors given its immediate parent. So, you know, given alarm, burglary is independent of Mary calls. Okay? So, if I put a ball here, I need to make sure that it doesn't fall here. So if alarm is given, alarm has become black. It's a shaded node. If you come to the shaded node in the direction of the arrow, you don't pass through, you bounce back. That is why Bayes bouncing ball algorithm. Okay? So essentially, alarm stops the influence of burglary to go to Mary. So once you give alarm, burglary doesn't influence Mary in any separate way. Okay? So you can actually think of this as, similarly, earthquake is independent of John call, given alarm. Furthermore, earthquake is independent of John calls and Mary calls, given alarm. Okay? Now the question, of course, is, if you just want to capture that view, that point, all you need to realize is a notion of separability. It turns out that every path from this node to this node passes through a black node, and the black node separates this guy from this guy. And whenever they separate, they are independent. That's one idea. It looks like that's the simple rule that you need to know. What is it? So let's look at this other case. I give you alarm. Is burglary independent of earthquake? If I give you alarm, is burglary independent of earthquake?
Yes.
It looks as if every undirected path from burglary to earthquake has to pass through alarm. So if I remove alarm, then burglary should be, if I give you alarm, burglary should be independent of earthquake. But what did we talk about in the class for the last two classes? If you know that alarm went off, burglary is actually dependent on earthquake. Burglary is actually dependent on earthquake. Okay? So these shaded nodes actually act differently. In this particular case, this ball did come here. It can't pass through, but it can bounce back. It bounces back. And because it bounces back, it goes back to earthquake. Again, this game I'm making is essentially just a game such that if you just follow the rules of that game, everything that we know should be holding will be holding. Okay? So let me just show you. So what we are saying here is this rule. If I have an evidence here, this is an evidence node, and I put a ball here, it'll come here, it won't come through this way, it'll just bounce back. And similarly, if I put a ball here, it'll bounce to this side. Okay? Now, further, what about this? What about this? Consider this one. X, Z, Y. Given Y, is X independent of Z? Yes. Yes. So if the arrow direction, if you came to the evidence node towards the evidence node, then you would bounce back. If you went in the opposite direction to the evidence node, then you cannot pass through. Okay? So this actually separates X from Z. Those are the rules for Bayes bouncing ball. And these two rules essentially are saying the obvious things we know, which is this is the explaining away rule, which means if two things are causing one evidence, one variable, and if you know that variable, then those two things are dependent on each other. If you just do these rules, you can answer random questions of the following kind. Okay, so here is a network. Okay, I want to ask, ball cannot pass through X2 through X6, not X3. Okay, so what I want to know is X1 independent of X6? is in x1 independent of x6 given these two nodes which are evidences. So what I'll do is I'll put a ball on x1 and wait to see if it ever reaches x6. Using my rules, if I go in the direction of the arrow, I will bounce back. So I'll never pass through. So this way I can't come to this direction. And similarly here too, I'll come back. So a ball from here can never reach this spot. So x1 is independent of x6 given these two, which makes sense. Okay? However, is x2 independent of x3 given x1 and x6? I did tell you I'll ask all sorts of crazy conditional independence assertion questions, so you should be able to answer it. Here is one. Okay? So I'll give you x1 as well as x6. I want to know, is x2 independent of x3 or not? It's not. Why? Because a ball from x2 can come like this, bounce and come back here. In a normal sense, two things are dependent. The two things are dependent if one of their descendant nodes is in the evidence. They are independent if the only evidence consists of their ancestor nodes, common ancestors, then they are independent. If the evidence consists of any of their descendants, then they are dependent. Okay. Again, this discussion is only to show that every one of these conditional independence assertions that I wrote here, you can check these out using these simple rules of Bayes-Bars. Okay. But really the only main one that you will keep using in designing algorithms with Bayes networks is the rule that a node is independent of its siblings and its ancestors given its immediate parents. Now, notice that I did not say that a node is independent of its co-parents. You know, I was careful in making my assertion. So for example, I never said, a node here would be independent of its siblings and its ancestors given all its immediate parents. But it does not have to be independent of its co-parents. Okay? So the version that I wrote here is much more special version than that I can actually write. But that's enough to understand how a Bayes network specifies a unique joint probability distribution. So we will stop here today. Next class, we'll do two things. One is we will talk a little bit more about how, you know, something that I said earlier, which is you can further reduce the number of numbers that you use to, you know, provide a Bayes network by actually giving, for example, here x is dependent on u1 and um, u1 to um, rather than give 2 power m numbers, you can give much fewer numbers by looking at a parameterized distribution. We'll talk about that, and we'll look at inference itself with Bayes network.